Welcome to Thrive Deeper, the show based on the Thrive Bible reading guides. This is an ongoing conversation about God's Word with Thrive author, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Good morning, Matt. Bit of a chilly one this morning, and I know you like the cold.
I love it, Stu.
But I've got the heater on because I like it a bit warmer. Yeah. So we'll have to find compromise, Matt, and I'll do that in the nicest possible way.
But do we have a hot topic, though? That's the question.
We do have a hot topic, actually. Mm. Listeners, welcome to Thrive Deeper. We are embarking on our second episode of the Book of Proverbs. And Matt, we're going to approach Proverbs a little bit differently. Rather than working through sort of passage by passage, which the Thrive Reading Guide does, we've decided to sort of break it up into sort of mega themes and then to, at each episode, sort of work through those mega themes. Mm. So listeners, you know, you might find yourself referencing a few different places through Scripture, but through the Book of Proverbs anyway, as we talk about these various topics. And today, we...
Unless you're driving your car on a run, which do realize that a lot of people listen.
That's true.
In those contexts.
Today, this week, we are going to be looking at the power of the tongue, our words, really.
Yeah.
And looking at what Proverbs has to say about that. And I think one of the most profound statements within Proverbs that I found is in Proverbs 18:21, and we'll obviously come to that, where it says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Mm. And I think as we work through this conversation around the power of the tongue and our words, whether we're speaking face-to-face or talking on the phone or even using our digital tongue, and I think it's important to remember that it's not
true,
just what we say,
in
a comment thread or in a text message or an email, whatever it might be, our words are powerful and they always have consequences. Whether they're good or whether they're bad.
That's right. Well, let's think for a moment before we look at specific examples.
Great.
Let's think for a moment as to why that is. It's interesting that this is one of the most common topics in the Proverbs. In fact, you know, apart from wisdom itself, and then you've got all of this Proverbs about, you know, the righteous will this, but the wicked will this, you know, and so then you've got those sort of sayings. But after that, Stu, speech is the most common,
the
biggest thing in the Book of Proverbs, which is really interesting that that is so high. And it is, as you say, because our words are very powerful. And I think this goes right back, of course, you know, if we go right back to Genesis chapter 1, we have God speaking and God said, and it was, right? And then we're created in the image of God. And human beings in Genesis chapter 2 are then, and because, you know, it talks about God speaking things into existence and then naming things. And naming things is a act of imbuing that thing with a certain sort of significance, or it's a gesture of authority, essentially. Right. And so in Genesis chapter 2, we see that Adam is given the naming right. So, and it's very emphatic the way that it puts it, you know, and he says, and whatever Adam named the animal, you know, so God gave it to Adam to name all the animals, and whatever he named the animal, that was its name. It's really emphatic. And it's because, you know, he has this authority. And of course, speaking and our ability to communicate verbally is really the most obvious thing that separates us from the animals.
Yeah.
Kevin Van Hooser, in a really great article in the Cambridge Companion to Christian Doctrine, he talks about human identity and sort of summing up a kind of a biblical view of human identity. You know, what does it mean to be created in the image of God, and what are the key elements out of that? And really, he, I think, quite rightly locates that, and in a sense, summarizing a lot of theological discussion around that, locating that in our ability to communicate. We are communicating creatures, you know, but not just in the way that, you know, dogs bark and monkeys chirp or whatever they do. You know, birds chirp, don't they? We have this deeper relational ability. You know, we're deeply relational creatures in a way that no other creatures are, and we are able to reflect verbally and communicate verbally in the way, and through that we create something, and we are something that is quite unique. And in that sense, they really locate that distinctness, you know, that the ability to speak. And through our speaking, we order our world.
Yeah.
You know, we have this thing called culture, which we have created culture, and we've created our world. You know, civilization, for better or for worse, is the result of our linguistic abilities.
Yeah.
And of course, we're deeply relational creatures. We are really hypersocial. One describe human beings as hypersocial creatures. Mm. And of course, to be social is to communicate.
Yeah.
And so we have this, you know, this elevated level of, you know, communicating with one another. And of course, in our communication, we become who we are through our communication. So we are defined relationally in a sense. Our sense of self comes from our interaction with others and, of course, theologically with God primarily.
And, yeah. And, of course, and an extension to that, other people's perception of us comes from our communication
as
well. So,
yeah, that's right.
Sense of ourselves, yes, but also other people's senses of who we are comes from how we speak.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's the light into what's really in our hearts.
And, I mean, Jesus has in Matthew 15, you know, he says, hear and understand, it is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth.
Yeah.
This defiles a person. And in a sense, you know, he is saying that our speech in a way defines us and can defile us. Or as, I mean, in Proverbs 18:20, it says, from the fruit of their mouth, a person's stomach is filled. With the harvest of their lips, they are satisfied. It's an interesting idea. With the harvest of their own lips, they're satisfied. I mean, there's some really deep stuff here in the Proverbs. I mean, you get these two line statements, but there's a world of wisdom under these. And there is this sense that I can, like, I both establish who I am and in a sense become who I am through the mode of my communication.
Yeah.
And it can rebound back on me in ways that can be very self-destructive as well.
Yeah. And we read a lot of that as we read through the Proverbs under a heap of different sort of subtopics, really, where it, you know, those two line talk about if you do this, that will happen. And if you do that or say this, then you will likely reap this
in return.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I think also as we move into this, remembering that the whole of Proverbs is couched in this term, the fear of the Lord. And I think if our speech and everything we say comes under that sense of reverence to God and saying,
absolutely.
And in our hearts going, what would God be thinking about me saying this?
Yeah.
I think that helps shape everything.
The overall point here is that what we say matters.
Yeah.
Just mouthing off in an unrestrained and rash way can do an enormous amount of damage to us and to other people because our speech is powerful, and we'll explore this, but the theme of rashness and unrestraint in speech is a big thing in the Proverbs. So sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues. That's Proverbs 10:19. 12:23, the prudent keep their knowledge to themselves. Isn't that, that's an interesting one. But a fool's heart blurts out folly. Those who guard their lips preserve their lives, but those who speak rashly will come to ruin. The one who has knowledge uses words with restraint, and whoever has understanding is even-tempered. Even fools, I love, this is one of my favorite ones. Even fools are thought wise if they keep silent. That's great. And discerning if they hold their tongues.
And I mean, that's such an important one in a world where opinions, you know, seem to be such a big thing. Everyone wants to state their opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, we need to just stop and listen and understand that we don't know
it. Yeah, that's right. And so Proverbs 18:13, to answer before listening, that is folly and shame. So this idea of rashness, you know, and I think we are, you know, we're far too
reactive.
Yeah, we're far too reactive, and we're far too sort of self-permissible with our words. And, you know, but neither should we be stingy with our words. I think this is another thing as well. We shouldn't withhold. We shouldn't withhold from people, because blessing and truth and honesty is so important.
Yeah, you know, I particularly highlighted one on that particular theme there. A person finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, such a powerful word. Because, I mean, the number of times people have, you know, not without necessarily knowing what's going on in my life, through the Holy Spirit's lead, have just come and said something, and it's like, oh man, I so needed to hear that in that moment.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it just so powerful.
Yeah, and so, and this is the thing in Proverbs as a whole, there are always what seemingly are opposing points. On the one hand, don't be rash, don't be mouthing off. But on the other hand, don't withhold, don't, you know, open your mouth and speak. It's like, hang on, which one do you want? And you do get this a lot. You get this a lot in the Proverbs. In fact, there was one.
Oh, I found one that contradicted itself like two verses later. Yeah. Let me find
out. This is the one. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him. And then in the next chapter, answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes.
I highlighted those two to go, hey, Matt, here's a curly one. What are we meant to do here? You know.
Yeah. The first one is don't be drawn onto his ground in a sense. Don't become like him.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's what that's saying. Because like, say, or you'll just be like him. Like, so don't get drawn into Jesus. And I mean, Paul talks about this, you know, when he's talking to Timothy, and he says, listen, Timothy, don't get drawn into endless debates and speculative conversations about, like, don't get drawn into that. That's the sort of thing that this is talking about. But the answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own eyes. That means
more about correction.
That's more about correction. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one's a bit about a race to the bottom, you know, who can kind of argue in foolishness, really, about things, whereas the second one is much more about, hey, we do need to correct people if they're wrong. Otherwise, they think they're right. You know,
but there's still a sort of a tension there, because on the one hand, it's saying don't go there. The second one is saying no, go there. Mm. But this is wisdom, right? Because these are not rules. Remember we said, you know, in the last episode, they're not promises. They're not rules. Yeah. Okay, this isn't Torah. This is wisdom. And so you get these in certain circumstances, answer a fool according to his folly. In other circumstances, don't go there. And you've just got to know when is the right, you know, when is the right time, and the, you know, right time, right place, right person, to do and say the right thing, and that is what wisdom is all about.
And that's such a great point, because often it's the right thing to say, it's just not the right time.
Exactly.
To say it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's where lots of mistakes are made. I've been in many sort of meeting situations where someone said something in the context of the whole meeting that really would have been much better addressed.
Exactly.
Just with that person, you know, or, you know, with my kids, any of us that are parents, I know it's pointless trying to address an issue with a child who's angry and, you know, you got to wait for the right time to say the same words, but in the right time.
Exactly.
In the right place. Spot on.
And in the right way. And it's, you know, and something that, you know, people often says, well, I was just being truthful.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, there is a time, a place, and a way in which to do that, and getting that right time and that right place and doing it in the right way is what wisdom is all about.
And I think that, you know, leads really well to a point that you've made many times before on other topics. It's to remember that words aren't just what we say, they're to do something.
Yeah.
So we've got to think about, I just don't need to say this so it's said.
Yeah.
I need to think about, what am I trying to do with these words?
Yeah.
And then make sure that the place and the person and the time and everything else is right to achieve what I want them to achieve.
Yeah.
Not just to get them said.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this is, and that's a good point, Stuart. And it'd just be worth just dwelling on that point for a moment, because I think we can tend to think that just saying stuff is not as sort of ethically significant as maybe doing something. You know, the sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, no, that's actually not true.
Yeah.
Words can actually hurt you in a way that will take a lot longer to heal from than sticks and stones.
Yeah.
You know, words can actually cripple someone in ways that can be, I mean, that can be really, really significant.
Yeah.
And so it's important to remember that. And this is also highlights the not only the ethical importance, but why our words can affect us as well, in a sense, because we are doing, it is an action. And when you act, you in a sense, I mean, there is some sense in which we establish who we are through our action, in a sense, you know what I mean? The way that we act is enacting who we are becoming, you know. And our words are part of that action. So in the early, you know, 20th century, and pretty much from the early 20th century, it's interesting in philosophy, because philosophy of language became a really big thing. I mean, first of all, it was recognized that all of this philosophy that we've been doing for hundreds of years. This is in speaking from the, you know, from the point of view of philosophy. They were saying, well, we've been doing all of this philosophy, but we've been using these words, right? And so we need to understand about language and the relationship of language to reality. And so that became a big thing. I'm not going to go too much into this, Stuart. You know, I think there were really useful conversations. I mean, there's a lot that went on that was just, you know, classic sort of analytical philosophy that can just get overly pedantic and very sort of abstruse. But there are some useful things that came out of this. And one of them was this sense in which, and this came out of Wittgenstein's later philosophy, that words essentially are tools that we use to do things with. And so we've got to analyze language based on what am I doing by what I'm saying. Whenever I'm saying something, I am actually also doing something. And
I think that's important. Yeah. There's a big that, and just that.
Yeah.
Whenever I say something, I'm always doing something.
That's
it's
right.
Not sometimes. No, it always is. For you, it may be just, I just felt it was important to say that. No. But the person who receives that, it's doing something.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the importance of that is because there was all this discussion around meaning, right? Like what is meaning? It's classic philosophical sort of discussion. What is the meaning of meaning? Well, for me to understand the meaning of what you're saying is to understand what is Stuart wanting to do by saying what he's saying, right? Yeah. So if I or let's say we go up to North Queensland and we see a sign that says there are crocodiles in the river. Not only do we need to understand what crocodiles and the river and all of that sort of stuff is, but we also need to understand what the sign is doing, right? Because it might say, come to the river and have a look at the crocodiles. No, it's a warning, right?
Yeah.
So it's trying to warn you. So there's a sense of – so to understand a communication is to understand what is being done. Now, the ethical significance of this is that we therefore – I think it's useful for us to ask ourselves, when I've just mouthed off for whatever – to really ask myself, what was I trying to do there?
Yeah.
You know, so there are ways in which we can sort of surreptitiously kind of undermine someone's reputation, you know, where we might say, I've forgiven them. But then the way that I speak about them is just very subtly slandering them in ways that have, and the only way that we're going to really discover that is if in our self-reflection, and self-reflection is important, is if we ask ourselves, what was I actually doing? What was I really doing there when I was talking about that person? Was I honoring them? Because that's a doing thing, to honor a person, you know, or was I slandering? Was I slandering thing? Now, one of the things that comes out of philosophy of language also is the understanding that there are certain things that we can only do by saying. So to slander someone, I can only slander someone by saying things, right?
Yeah.
And slander is a big, you know, is a big deal. I can only encourage someone by speaking. You know, encouragement is something that I do. So, you know, it's the same, you know, I can only really apologize to you by actually saying something. It's why when I say to one of my kids, apologize to your sister, and you know, my son might say, why? You know what, and it becomes a really big deal, and you think, what is the big deal? You're just saying something, but of course he knows that, to apologize to say something. I mean, he understands that now because he's 18. But you know, when he was younger, it was like, totally. No, you know, it'd be like, you know, 7 years old. No, I'm not going to. It's like, what's like, and there'd be enormous consequences. But for him, you know, even at that young, he understood the significance of speech, because the point was, I don't want to do this.
Yeah,
it's not just about saying, and so. This is why, Stu, I think there's this enormous ethical significance by what we say, because we enact certain things.
I think just to remind listeners, when we're talking about say, let's just remember that also includes things we write, things we post, messages we send, cards we might write in or not write in, those sorts of things. And to some degree, what we don't say can also, you know, I know that's a little bit counter to the convo here, but, you know, the obvious absence of something that should have been there, an encouragement or whatever it might be, can also say something in a way, more on the person's perception. But, I think the reflection thing's a really important thing. We do need to reflect, but with the hope that informs us for next time, so that we ask the question, why am I saying this before we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Rather than constantly reflecting afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That is the point of reflection. Yeah. It isn't just to reflect afterwards and go, I did that again.
Yeah.
The point of reflection is to go, next time, I want to actually think about that in advance.
Yeah, that's right. So before I send that text, I ask myself the question,
how would I
receive this? Would
this
be better?
Yeah.
With a phone call,
yeah,
or
totally.
With a face-to-face conversation,
yeah, totally.
Actually.
Yeah.
And so I'll not text. Or yeah. or the thing, because one of the things with texting is that you can do it impulsively,
yeah.
because the person isn't there. And an impulse is a dangerous thing. And this gets back to this rashness thing and the destructiveness yeah. of rashness, is there's this sense in which I'm doing it because I want to do it. Yeah, I you know,
it's
I'm
more
angry
about what it does for me.
That's
exactly
right.
right.
And so
the number of times I've stopped sending a text because I've yeah. written it and I've gone, why am I sending this text? You know, what is this person going to do with it?
Yeah.
It's actually not about them. It's about me.
Yeah.
I want to have it said that.
That's right.
You know, it's like, oh, gee, you know what? I'm not going to send that text.
That's right. Or if you get an email or a
yeah,
text and
totally.
That makes you angry or something, you want to reply in anger. Mm. That's the do not answer a fool according to his folly.
Yeah.
That's probably where that. You know, don't get drawn into that. But I mean, it's interesting because it also, there's a Proverbs 16:24, gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and yeah. healing to the bones. I can remember once receiving an email that made me quite angry because it, you know, accused me of all of these things. And I went to write the email back and I was going, really, you know, because I could easily just.
It's quite cathartic.
And you know, with all, you know, because I have some rhetorical skill. And so I was just going to rip it, yep. you know, sort of rip it to shreds. And as I was writing the email, I just sensed in my heart, you know, again, that question, Matt, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let's just stop.
And pride.
What
is
are
often
you doing?
The thing, isn't it?
And it was pride. It's,
yeah.
It was pride. It was anger. And it was actually what I was going to send back would have been even been quite hurtful. So I stopped, deleted it, and I came back to it. I think the next day, and I thought, you know what? And I remember this proverb actually: gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. And I found things in that communication that were valid. And I said, hey, you know what? This you made some really valid
starts
here.
Yeah.
And you're right on there actually. And I do need to watch out for that. And so look, you know, thanks for that. And but I also said, I think some of the things were unfair and I'd encourage you to but I really appreciate you reaching out and whatever. So I was very gracious
so
reply.
There are those two contradictory verses we spoke to before. Do not answer a fool according to his folly,
yeah.
or you yourself will just be like him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, answer a fool
yeah.
according to his folly. So it's in a sense, it's don't get drawn
yeah,
down
yeah.
to that level.
Exactly.
Whatever that might have been. Find the truth in it and speak to that.
Yeah.
But also correct where correction yeah. needs to be.
That's yeah. right. And you know, wow. I got the most beautiful email back.
Yeah, wow.
Like just, yep. oh, thanks so much. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I was a bit yep. I was a bit hot-headed that day. And actually... You know, it was a real moment for me of learning, okay, moments like these can be healed by what we choose to do or not to do
yeah.
with our speech or writing or language.
Spot on.
That's right. You know, on that note too, Stu, I mean, words, as I said before, can do a lot of injury. And, you know, it's Proverbs 18 verse 21, the tongue has the power of life and death. And those who love it will eat its fruit. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. It's interesting, that second line, the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. There's a sense of, I'm going to say this and I'm doing violence and it's veiled in my words.
Yes.
My violence
yeah.
is veiled in my words.
Yeah.
You know, the words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and it's amazing how easily we can damage those we love by what we say, and how particularly in close relationships, we can let go of the discipline of, oh. of our speech in our closest relationships.
That's such a great point.
Because we think... Oh, this is just where I get to say anything and everything.
Yeah.
And for some reason, and this is the irony, Stu, for some reason, in those, the most important relationships are often the ones we sabotage the most with our words.
Yeah, totally.
Because we think, oh, I'm at home. I'll just, you know, I remember once back in the days when we had answering machines, and I rang home and Kate picked up the phone, but the answering machine recorded it at the same time. And I had this very curt sort of conversation. I was a bit annoyed or whatever. And I went home, when I went home later that day and I checked the message and I heard myself speaking to my wife and I was devastated.
Yeah.
at how rude I was.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that moment because I thought, if I'm sowing this strife into my relationship, what do I expect? I'm poisoning the waters that from which I drink.
Yeah.
And our close relationships are so important. You live in the house that you make, right? And we can poison the waters that we drink from, so to speak, by just, in that case, I was just rude and short. It wasn't anything, you know, I wasn't saying horrible things. It was just the sheer rudeness.
Yeah. It's such a great point.
And I could
point.
Hear it in my shortness and in the tone of my voice.
It's like in this context, I don't want to have to work hard at being good at my communication. I don't want to invest the time. I'm just going to, and bad luck. And yet those are the people we love the most, you know, in a sense. We tend to treat the worst.
Exactly.
In a whole lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And I think even more so when we then observe our spouse or whoever that close relationship is talking to other people, and it's like, man, he speaks to her a whole lot nicer than he speaks to me, kind of thing. It suddenly makes us wonder where we actually sit in the value of that relationship. Yeah. So there's so much at play there. Yeah. That's such a great point.
Exactly. Yeah, and conversely, I think one of the most important things I've realized for those close relationships, particularly in marriage actually, is how much the opposite can make a difference. Just going back to that example, it wasn't even just the words, it was the tone, because we've got to remember that communication is 50% words and 50% tonality, right? If I, you know, I can change the meaning of a sentence by my tone, right? If I say, get out of here, or get out of here, like it means two completely different things.
Totally.
So, you know, tone is part of our meaning. So what devastated me in that situation was just the rudeness of my tone, let alone some of the horrible things we can say to each other as husbands and wives, and how much we so much poison our own well when we do that. And I keep saying that because I think it's good to picture what you're doing, and it is, you really can poison your own well. But conversely, we can also bring a lot of healing and a lot of love into our home by simple things, showing interest, asking a question about, being encouraging, it's the small things I think that matter. It's communicating positively that can do amazing things for building a strong relationship. And then you have something beautiful. Yeah. Then you have a well that refreshes your soul.
I'm sure we'll come back to this when we get onto the Proverbs sort of super topic of relationships, because I think there's such a lot in that where, you know, even just things in the home situation, marriage situation that I've, you know, had to work on, and it's probably true for many of us, is we just take so much for granted without actually even saying thank you or I really appreciate that, you know. It's like, well, of course I'm going to cook a meal, you know, or whatever it might be. It's like just acknowledging that someone's actually had to invest in the door. Anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And look, a good segue from this is, and this still deals with relationships in a sense, but it's our relationships with people when they're not there.
Yeah.
And this is a big one in the Proverbs. And this is this issue of slander and gossip. Mm. And this, it's interesting, Stu, because this comes back to this sense of sacredness and holiness. You know, there's this big deal, mate. I mean, you know, in the third commandment, do not take the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah.
Which is be careful about, I mean, one dimension of that is be careful what you do with the name. Like, be careful with how you speak about God. It always should be in an honoring way, right? Don't just throw it out there in oaths and all sorts of things, in its context. I mean, that also means about wearing the name of God as a person, you know.
It's his brand.
Yeah, that's right. But there's also this sense of the sacredness of human beings, and the sense in which, because human beings are sacred and children of God, to honor God, we must also honor human beings, whether they're good or bad, in a sense. You know what I mean? Like, because human beings, so if you go off and do a lot of horrible things, you don't cease to be a sacred child of God, right? Because, you know, Jesus, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, Paul says, right?
Yeah.
Which is the supreme expression of our infinite sacred value. Okay. So whether a person is right or wrong, they are a sacred child of God. Whether they're a Christian or a non-Christian, they're a sacred child of God. And we need to honor people as such. And in fact, this is how, this is, I think, important aspect of evangelism is loving people and reflecting through our love, reflecting to them that they are sacred,
yeah.
right? Helping them to recognize how sacred and valuable they are.
By the way we treat them.
By the way that we treat them. Now, not only in their presence, but also in their absence. And there's a sense in which we need to always ensure that we are honoring people in their absence. And so Proverbs 10, you know, whoever conceals hatred with lying lips and spreads slander is a fool. So, you know, there's this, I mean, we can injure someone by injuring their reputation. If I speak about you and injure your reputation, it's ethically the same as if I walked up to you and smacked you in the face.
Yeah.
And in fact, you may heal more quickly from me hitting you. And you know I would never do that, Stu, don't you? you would heal more quickly than if I slandered you, particularly behind your back. I mean, if I slander you to your face, you can reply, right? Mm. But if I slander you to other to other people, well, I mean, damage is done, and you don't have the ability to because how people honor or not honor other people, because we remember we're hyper-social creatures, and so if you damage a person's reputation, real damage is done because it damages the way that people then relate to them.
Yeah, and I think that one's even more nuanced because, in a sense, it's to me anyway, it's kind of inferring. I say to you what I think you want to hear. I think you're great. Blah blah blah. Lying lips, because I'm concealing, yeah. let's say, hatred, the terminology it uses here. But then I go off and talk to a whole lot of other people, and put you down.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm concealing the fact that I'm not actually being honest with you in the first instance, but I'm happy to go talk to everyone else and be honest about what I think about.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's like, it's so destructive. Absolutely. That's so destructive.
Absolutely. You know? And let's remember in Matthew chapter 5 when Jesus is talking about, you've heard it said, you shall not murder. Yeah. But I say to you, if you even hate your brother in your heart, yeah. and then he goes, if you even say you fool, right?
Yeah.
The insult or the slander or the, you know, the hatred in the heart. And yeah, that idea of concealing hatred with lying lips and spreading slander. Because, you know, it can be done very self-righteously, you know, like in this, oh, can you believe what that person did?
And can I speak to that? Because this is a big one for me in churches, to be honest. My years of experience in church life is we often jump to conclusions and go talking to a whole lot of other people about what we think a person did until we finally get to actually talk to the person. And then we figure out that we actually got it wrong.
Yeah.
That wasn't what they meant or that's not what they said or that's not what they did. We never go back to all those people.
No, that's right.
And put that right. So we've done the damage, even though we found out we were wrong.
Yeah.
And so it's so important that we start with the person
before
we go talking to anyone else about what we think they said or they did or whatever it is and get their understanding of it. Because I tell you now, if we all had to go back to the people where we, oh, I can't believe Matt did this. And then I discover, well, actually Matt didn't do that, or that's not what he was meaning by what he said. If I had to go back to all those people, you know, we would slow down having those conversations with others before we'd spoken to the person.
Directly. And it can happen so easily, and it can do so. Even relatively innocent sort of gossip, you know, can when you're not quite sure, you know, you have the truth. I mean, it was an interesting one recently where a very old friend of mine put something up on for telling a story about when we were a lot younger, you know, and it's mentioned something about I'd just been through a breakup or something. And it's like, you know, back when I'm like 20 or something. And then I had people coming back. Oh, I heard that you and Kate broke up. It's like
dangerous.
And so I thought, how many people have
read that?
Or not, because that was innocent, but someone, you know, obviously misread that.
Yes, and then said
something, you know, I don't know. And so suddenly, you know, you've got people that, oh, did you hear that Matt and Kate broke up? It's like, no, I'm thankfully, yes, very thankfully, not. You know, so that's a case where, you know, so the innocent, you know, where gossip can spread untruth, and truthfulness is very important in a biblical ethic. Truthfulness is important because twisted truths going out there creates a sort of kind of chaos. And so making sure that you know the truth and not talking about it until, you know, because the old grapevine, I mean, even, you know, the grapevine effect. It can just gradually change as it gets further and further and further.
Yeah. Chinese whispers is another term for that.
Chinese whispers. That's right. Yeah. Yep. And churches stew.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's like, you know, churches can be, you know, echo chambers for, I mean, talk about grapevines. And often it can end up being Chinese whispers.
Yeah, totally.
As well. And so it gets further and further away from the truth.
And I think on the gossip thing, I think 50% of gossip at least probably is much more about a sense of my pride, making sure that you know that I know this before anyone else does, than it is about, I mean, what's the value? And again, asking ourselves the question, why am I sharing this? Or why am I saying this?
Yeah.
What am I trying to do by sharing this?
Yeah.
Is it just that I want to puff myself up? Oh, hey, Matt, I know this and you don't, kind of thing. And make sure you hear it first from me.
Yeah.
Or is there a real positive purpose in me sharing? And if there isn't, we should just leave it alone.
Yeah. And look, the amount of times, because often as a pastor, I do have fairly firsthand understanding of something that's going on, and someone will came to, oh, I heard that. No, not really.
Yep.
And, you know, and I'll be quick to just put that, you know, put that right and just be careful about what you say, you know, about that, because very sensitive. And it's amazing how much then how much discord that can put out there, you know, can make a difficult situation worse. When all sorts of misconceptions are out and about, even knowing why people do the things that they do. And, you know, it's like all the conversations that go on, you know, I just don't understand why they, you know, did that, or why, you know, it's like, well, okay, you don't understand, so maybe you should hold your tongue.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't understand, then don't talk about it. Because the way that you can talk about it can be, actually, you're saying you don't understand, but your tone is, I disagree and I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
And that's the difference with, that's, it's an interesting comment, the, I just don't understand how our words are actually saying something different to our tone, because our tone is, that's just so stupid and I disapprove of that.
And I think also sometimes we say that, I don't understand, without actually thinking about what we're meaning by that. And so, you know, again, in church life, you know, I think it's important to go, well, it might be that I don't understand that decision, but the question is, do I trust the people who made that decision?
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's what I'm really saying.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a dumb decision.
And am I going to sow trust or mistrust?
Correct. Yeah. I don't trust those people, in which case I'm either now going to sow, well, I'm not sure about that either, but I trust Matt and the team, or whoever it might be who made that call, that they've given it really good thought, and I'm going to support that, you know. Or if we feel we can't, then that's where that one-on-one conversation is, rather than having the conversation and sort of building up numbers of support before you go directly to the source. Because again, then you go to the source and you find out, oh, I got it wrong. I'm never going to go back to my crowd that I built, you know.
It was interesting, you know, and I think being a leader makes you extra aware of the complexities, you know, and I, you know, remember during, you know, 2020 and 2021, you know, when there was all this sort of, you know, kind of vitriolic talk, you know, about the government, and, you know, I'm not saying I agreed with everything the government did, but I recognize the complexity of the situation and the conversations about leaders. I just was not, from the mouths of some Christians, I just was not comfortable with how they were talking about our leaders. And given the extreme complexity, you know, like, I'd say things like, well, I mean, it's an incredibly complex situation. And I, when asked my opinion, I would say, I don't believe that I know better. So I just don't think.
I think I do.
Yeah, but that's right. And I think I became more sensitive to that as a leader when you are dealing with very complex situations and you have a bunch of bad options to choose from.
Yeah.
And you choose one of those options, and it's easy to say what, you know. And so this is where talk, and we've got to remember what this does to us. And I feel like a lot of the talk and a lot of the anger, that sort of the angry talk that went around, and I mean, those years were years of a lot of angry talk, and I feel like it had a really untoward effect on a lot of people that engaged with that and got stuck in that echo chamber of just angry talk, angry anti. And this is the thing where our speech affects us. We, in a sense, we defile our own hearts by, you know, our angry talk, coming back to that point, you know, that was made in the proverb. So I think it's important to remember that what comes out of you, you can be defiled by what comes out of you. And don't, you know, I think it's really important to be extra discerning, because speech, you can veil from yourself what you're really doing so easily. Like I said in the example of where the words and the tone are saying two completely different things, and you might be able to justify by what you say. I mean, we deceive ourselves so easily. You know, we do things in such a way that makes, that hides from ourselves what we're really doing.
Yeah.
So we can sort of self-justify. You know, it's like plausible deniability. What to ourselves? I mean, this is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we really believe it. We claim, oh no, I was just. But if you want to grow as a person, and if you want to grow in your faith and grow as a Christian, self-justification is the worst way to go. What you should be looking for is not how you were right, but is there something here that I need to go back to and think about?
Yeah.
What, again, coming back to this question, what was I really doing there?
Yeah.
Really important question.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be negative about this too. I'm not here with a stick, and you know, we're not sort of rhetorically beating everyone up with this. This is a wonderful opportunity for us all to grow in significant ways, because changing these things and changing your speech habits will actually transform your life. It will transform your life. It will transform your relationship, and it will transform you as a person. And that is an exhilarating ride to be on that journey of transformation.
Yeah.
So let's recognize there's a really positive opportunity here.
We need to wrap up shortly, Matt, but just one other thing I want to add into that is I think there's an important aspect in terms of the way we use our words of discernment, because there are some conversations you can only have from a position of relationship. You can't have it from outside.
Yeah, true.
You need to get to know the person. They need to get to know you, to trust your heart so that they can receive what you're saying in the right way. And so I think it's important that we can't have, you know, we can't have an opinion and necessarily say things to people when we're outside of a relationship and we really don't know what's going on for them, or they don't know us and can trust us. So I think, again, discernment around, you know, what we can say to people and what we can't say to people when we're not close enough to have those really, what could be hurtful, unless there's strong relationship there that allows us to be able to be that kind of, you know, that, I'm really, I guess I'm speaking to that self-justification where, oh, I'm just being honest, you know, well, sometimes an honest conversation has to be had from a position of relationship.
And I think let's focus on, you know, if this all seems a little bit overwhelming, always lean into the positive, because we need to always remember we can do an enormous amount of good by what we say. And this is the sense in which we should not withhold. It's amazing how much of an effect an encouraging statement can have on someone. I mean, everyone needs this, even the people that you think don't. You know, to encourage someone, it's so easy, even if it's just, you know, via a text or to say, hey, just, you did a great job with that. And you know, like, well done. Or, hey, I really appreciate the way that you, or it's those moments that we stop and to send off, you know, it can be a 2-line text and it can be like anointing oil. Like it's amazing how much can be done in such a simple gesture.
It's amazing, isn't it, how much our anger drives us to immediate response, but how little our love and appreciation drives us to the same amount.
That's an interesting one. Yeah.
You know, anger gets us there straight away, but, you know, oh, I'll get around to that. You know, we just never do.
No, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think that acting out of love, like act, go, do, you know, speak out of that. In a sense, name the gold that you see in people, because it helps them to see the beauty in themselves as well. Remember, we're sacred children of God, and God has filled us with good things, and he's given us gifts and abilities and even personal qualities that shine. I think you can be a positive mirror for someone. It's so needed for people, because this is what encourages them to continually lean into the good, is by actually being that positive mirror. You know, I really appreciate the way that you do this. And as I said, it can have such a great, you know, effect. And so I think the thought to finish on, Stu, is this idea of blessing and curse. in Scripture, that with our lips we can bless and with our lips we can curse. In Numbers 16, you know, it says, the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron and his sons, this is how you are to bless the Israelites. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. Actually say it, you know. And I think this underscores this idea that there is power in our words. There's a real power of blessing and curse. To bless a person is to remind them, encourage them with the promises. Essentially, that's, you know, that's what this is. Or it's to encourage them. It's to build them up in any way. But we can also curse. And often we can say things that maybe even seem innocent to us. But it's essentially, and this is very polarizing, I know, blessing and curse with what we say. Remember, God has called us to be priests of God in a sense. We're a kingdom of priests. And so use the authority that you have to bless, right? Use the authority. Use the power of speech in whatever form to bless and build people up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Thrive Deeper. Our home on the internet is thrivetoday.tv. You can contact us, ask questions, see all our resources and much more at our website, thrivetoday.tv. We really appreciate the questions and thoughts about what you're reading as we go through the Bible with Thrive. Until next time, our prayer is that these shows will inspire you to go deeper and thrive.